Hello, you have a prepaid call from...
Keith Jesperson.
Bruce Davis.
Patton Clark. Robert Bardo.
What, what's your friend?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of The Lightest Side of Serial Killers. I am your host, Keith Rovere. Today, we are going to be talking to the Koreatown slasher, the supposed Koreatown slasher, Joseph Danks. Of course, he still proclaims his innocence. And again, this is a podcast where I don't press those issues. I just give them a platform so we can get to know them. On a personal level, you might say, why? Why do we want to get to know a serial killer? Well, so many documentaries and movies are made about people, but they never really interview them, and sometimes they don't even want to be interviewed. I get messages from doctors, from people who own film companies, independent companies, producers, trying to get access, you know, to these men and women, the people that I talk to. They want to know more about them, but they usually don't talk to them. I mean, they usually ask me, you know, why do they talk to me? No, I don't want anything from them. I'm not, you know, asking for anything. I'm not an autograph seeker and things like that. Of course, you know, in the background, you can see the happy face killer, some artwork that he sent me. But I just want to get to know them, you know, on a human level. I love studying neurology and about the mind, sometimes even a psychopathic mind. That's kind of why I do what I do, and also bring awareness of prison rehabilitation. Now, negative reinforcement doesn't work, but positive reinforcement does in a lot of cases. So that's why I do. And that's why he agreed to come on and talk about, you know, some of his, you know, personal beliefs and some of his struggles. I'm also going to have somebody who used to be a cellmate, a cellie, so to speak, with Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker. His name is Martin Kipp, nicknamed Dr. Crazy. But some of these men and women hear voices. Martin Kipp certainly does, and we'll hear Joseph Danks, you know, what he called spirits, kind of leading him and guiding him in certain ways. But it's fascinating. So we're going to be hearing a little bit about him. I've known Joseph for a long time now. Get the video chat working now at San Quentin, where we'll be talking to him from. San Quentin's death row, kind of more of a moratorium on death row. So they're transferring everybody out of San Quentin to different facilities around the state. I think just the state. I don't think they're taking them out of the state. I think just within California. I will talk to him a little bit about that. You know, I know a lot of people on San Quentin's death row. Some are happy to be transferred. Some are scared. Some could care less. I think Joseph is a little bit more on the, whatever, you know, kind of a thing, kind of play by ear. And we'll hear, you know, right from him. If you think some of these are very high profile people, from David Carpenter, who, as I was talking to him last night, the supposed Trailside killer. Some are wary because they're high profile, not necessarily David, but, you know, some other ones where you're going more of a general population now. You're very protected in death row. Now you're not. So there's some trepidation for a lot of them. But we'll get into that, you know, some future guests also. But now let's hear from Joseph Danks. One thing we were talking about last time. Before we got cut off, something I want to ask you more about. I didn't quite understand totally what you were saying. You said earlier on when you first got there, something about spirits. You know, you thought it took a while to get your mind cleared up, you know, for a while being in there.
It never clears up.
Oh, okay. How did that start? What was it?
It started in the 1960s. I was two, three or four, something like that. Somewhere around 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, something like that. I think I was younger than 5.
Okay.
And I seen a dresser move. In my cousin's bedroom.
Okay.
My cousin Nick and Jeff Badalamente on Mercer Street in Essexville, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And the dresser started going like this.
Wow.
The little brass handles were like going back and forth.
Wow.
And I was sitting there, and I think I was sitting on the bed. I think I got up to walk out the door is when it started. I don't know if I was sitting on the bed because the dresser was just a little ways from the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I got up, I think, mm-hmm. and I said, well, let me touch it, right? But I said, no, no, don't touch it. It'll stop,
oh,
right?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
It'll slow it down. It'll stop it, right? Mm-hmm. So I didn't touch it. I just sat there watching it, waiting for it to stop. I don't know how long it lasted, just a matter of some seconds, right?
Yeah.
And my mom told me I told her about it, that I told her about it. But I never remember telling, but I think I did.
Okay.
But then there was nothing. I mean, so to speak, you know, as far as anything like that, for that would have been 60, 64, 65, 66, something like that,
yeah,
until 74.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was sleeping, and they came and into my ears and said, call the ambulance, your grandmother's going to die.
Wow.
Another thing, they wanted me to get up and go to the phone. So whatever they said, I remember them saying, call the ambulance, your grandmother's going to die.
Wow.
And instead of getting up and going to the phone, I just went back to sleep and ignored them.
Mm.
And so I think I forgot about it for some years. Then I started thinking about it, and it drove me fucking out of my mind.
Can imagine.
Because I wanted them to talk again.
Yeah.
So I remember in 1982, I was breaking out the garage windows of my mom's house, and I was screaming and hollering because I had conjured up a bunch of like hallucinogenic thoughts or some shit that there was money buried in the backyard.
Oh wow!
And but I had done this in Detroit. I had done this in Mariana, Florida. I had got arrested for it in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
For stealing a shovel and digging a hole in somebody's backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him that my grandmother said that there was money buried there, right?
Yeah.
Which was total just fruitcake, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I actually believe this. I'd done it in Sweetwater, Texas. I got arrested in Sweetwater, Texas for carrying a stolen shovel.
Oh, wow.
I can't remember what they arrested me for. If it was for the stolen shovel or I was walking around somebody's property or something.
Yeah.
And I spent like a few days in jail. Willie Nelson was filming a movie then.
Oh, really?
In Sweetwater, Texas.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So even in El Paso, I think I was doing the same thing.
Oh, wow.
In El Paso, Texas. But when it first started, when I first started thinking about it after 74, however many years it was, however long, when I first started thinking about, you know, that I wanted that thing to talk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't talk. And I used to scream and holler, tear up myself, tear my clothes. Like when I was told you when I was in New Jersey, it's in the court record.
Oh, wow.
In New Jersey. I tore my clothes and I had somebody call the cops and the cops drove me down to a place and I called my mom and shit. They took me to a Goodwill or something to get some clothes or some shit like that. And I told them about it, that I was mad because the spirits wouldn't talk. I told them that.
Yeah.
It's in the court record.
Yeah. That's wild.
But it never leaves my mind.
Wow.
Because every waking moment, I'm hoping and my mind is open even after everything that's happened to me where it doesn't make any sense in the world.
Yeah.
My mind is open hearing the spirits talk that they'll talk to somebody else. That's what the whole thing used to be. I thought if I got the death penalty, the spirits would talk to somebody else. They would raise them up. It would be like a vacuum because it happened to me. Mm-hmm. Like a vacuum when you're trying to breathe, it would just be going in. You couldn't breathe. Like a vacuum. They would raise up somebody. They would then know about the spirits.
Yeah.
And the spirits would then thereby talk to me if my life was put in peril.
Sure.
That's what I believe. I told you that the last time.
Yeah.
I never came around to that till like over 20 some years later.
Wow.
I totally believe that. I went on all kinds of shit. I used to think about it's too fucking embarrassing to even talk about.
Yeah, well, it is. Yeah, I mean, it's just reality. You know, not to be embarrassed. It is what it is. You know, and when was the last time when's the last time it happened? When's the last time you heard of
it? Oh, I never heard him again. Ever since 74.
Okay. Oh, so that's been that long. Okay, since then. Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Drives me absolutely up the wall. Wow. Every fucking day.
Yeah. Oh, that's wild.
I think nowadays, I think I'm getting a little bit better because I can distinguish between when I get mad at them, mm-hmm. at the spirits. I call it spirits, right? Mm-hmm. That it was the spirits of the dead that done this. Mm-hmm. But nothing ever told me that. Nothing ever said, yes, it was the spirits. I had no proof of that. Mm-hmm. But that's what I call it. Gotcha. So it could have been anything. But yeah. I know it was the spirit. Mm-hmm. It's just something that you know.
Yeah.
I can't remember what that was. Something that you know, but that you can't substantiate.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I forgot what they called that. I can't remember what it's called.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Something that you know, but that you can't substantiate.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
So either way, I can't substantiate it, right?
Sure.
Even if it was a spirit, or that I know that mm-hmm. it was, or if it was something else.
Sure.
But.
Well, it's just your reality. You know, it something that is. Whatever it is, it's there. It's your reality. Whatever name you want to call it doesn't really – that's the important part. The important part that it's there, you heard things, and maybe you'll hear again. You know, you don't know.
Yeah.
You know what the purpose is.
That was the second time it came into my life, was 74.
Mm-hmm.
Then it came again like in 78,
mm.
79. It moved a can opener. You know them little can openers?
Sure, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That uh-huh. that got a little pointed end where you poke holes in the can.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have the little beer,
yeah.
The little bottle opener on the other end.
Uh-huh.
It moved a can opener.
Wow.
I was my brother's band, the bass player, Gennaro. The bass player, his name was Gennaro, my mm-hmm. brother Pete. They were waiting to rehearse at a little biker club mm-hmm. on the south end of Bay City. And I can't remember how I went over there, if I was with them or if I somehow I knew they were there and I walked over there.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sitting down. Nobody showed up. Oh, they didn't get to rehearse or anything. We were just sitting around. You know them wooden spools, that cable is spooled around?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was sitting there like a little table.
Okay.
You know, empty.
Mm-hmm.
Empty, of course. And sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bunch of bric-a-brac, miscellaneous, whatever the fuck you call it, sitting on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sitting there talking, it was mostly my brother Pete was talking to Gennaro,
mm-hmm.
and I was sitting there. I probably smoking cigarettes. I think I was drinking a Coke or something. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And a can opener went just like this, like
wow.
like a foot off the table.
Wow!
And I was gonna say, did you see that? And my brother Pete just kept talking, didn't say any fucking thing, didn't miss a beat, kept talking right through it, right? So I didn't say nothing.
Wow.
And I got excited about this. Like, it must have been, let's see, 30 years later.
Mm.
And I wrote my brother all kinds of letters
mm-hmm.
telling him about it.
Yeah.
But I since I've been talking to him, I bring that up all the time about the can opener movie. I mm-hmm. talk to my brother Mike about it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing was wasted on him, man.
That's wild.
You know, I always thought, well, yeah, that was the spirit's way. Because I always used to try to score drugs from the bass player, Gennaro, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he would always burn me and sell me fake drugs and dirt weed and all kinds of shit like that.
Yeah.
And many times I thought about that years later. Why did he do that when the can opener moved? I'm sure that he's seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And no, that didn't cut me no slack anywhere.
Oh, no. Now, what's amazing now with medical marijuana everywhere, marijuana is legal almost most places. When we were younger, when I was a kid, it's like you can just smoke a joint to yourself and go out and then go out for the night. It's so strong now. The percentage is so high, like it's probably about 10% THC back in the day. Now it's over 30% THC, which means you smoke a joint now, you're going to be a zombie. The strength is so astronomical strong. It's amazing now that it's legal. It's wild. It's everywhere. There's a dispensary, marijuana dispensary, like almost every corner now. And back at how
yep.
from being illegal to, there's edibles now. Everybody has the edible form, the liquid form. You smoke it. You got vaporizers. It's everywhere. It's an amazing scene now.
Now they'll have to do it with chemicals.
Well, there's a lot of out there. You know, some states are more liberal, talking about legalizing mushrooms now, like psychedelic mushrooms and some other things. And
chemicals, like all kinds of shit, like prescription drugs, chemicals.
Could be, you don't know, yeah. It's wild. You never know what's going to happen. Definitely don't know. Oh, got the minute warning. No.
Yeah. Do you want me to log back in? And
yeah, do that. Do that and call right back. That's good. It's a great time.
It goes off.
Yeah, definitely. They said,
"Here's that song. Here's that song I was telling you about."
Yes,
it's DEAD.
Yeah, it sounds like it's in tune too. It sounds great.
DEAD for the spirit of the dead being dead every day, getting closer to being dead. The death penalty, being dead by the death penalty. DEAD. Plus, when I made it up, I used to think about all of the world's weapons proliferated, like filling up the Grand Canyon with A-bombs and germs. And
wow.
Like there was a book by, Clive Custer called Vixen 03.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in a boat fishing or some shit, had a six pack and dropped it into the water. And he made up the story about a plane carrying germ canisters.
Mm-hmm.
That crashed in a lake in Colorado or some shit.
Wow.
Then there was a big old people getting them and all this. And I used to think about that book. I put it in the book I wrote about all of the weapons hooked up to the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
So when your heart stopped and you got the death penalty, that all of the weapons would go off.
Wow.
Blow the whole world up, bust it like an egg. You know, proliferate everything to where there was so much.
Wow.
So I used to think about that every midnight when the death penalty, the time of the death penalty comes around.
Mm-hmm.
And all day I would play that song, DEAD.
Wow.
And I would this was a long time ago. Star Trek used to come on at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And it would show a picture of the spaceship flying across the screen and then zooming across right at midnight.
Wow. Okay.
And I would off and on the lights like 1,000 times and flush the toilet 1,000 times.
Wow.
And talk about ethnic cleansing and shit that they were doing in Yugoslavia and every fucking thing.
Yeah. Play it. I'll solo over top of it. Play the chords again. We'll do a whole jam.
Elbows banging against the fucking wall. These strings are out of line.
It sounded good though.
My ass is all fucked up on this toilet.
That's how we got the jam a little bit. I had a little. So we had
you
a little jam
to turn
going.
Yours. You needed to turn yours up though.
Yeah, it's impossible for you to hear from here. Yeah, with the microphone.
Oh yeah.
That'd be too hard, but. When doing all this, when I record it, I'll make sure I'll turn everything up so it'll be a good balance. So we'll be able to hear it together and listen.
You know, one time I was playing that song and I was in the other building and one of the guards came by. He said, play me a song, right?
Uh-huh.
So I started playing that because I played it all the time. This was like back in 2012 or 13
uh-huh.
when I first made it up, because I'd been thinking about all that stuff a long time before that, right?
Sure.
And I first made it up in 2012 or 13, and he said, play me a song. So I started playing. He said, that's not a song.
Oh, that's great.
I said, yeah, I made it up.
That's great. Last time we were talking about, you know, you're kind of had me jealous and a lot of people when I was talking to you about your, you know, kind of just lived on the road, you know, most of your life. What are some stories when you think about
from
your time?
Uh, From 1977 to 1987.
That one, wow, that's amazing. And you think that, what are some of the stories that stick out to you about just, we talked about a few last time. Is there any other stories that you can think of? Or just enjoying yourself out on the road? And
one time I had this old Checkmate guitar. Mm-hmm. You've heard of a Checkmate, right?
Yeah.
The cheapest, cheapest thing you can get. Mm-hmm. But it was good. The strings were all in line perfect. It was a good guitar, right? Mm-hmm. But I put nylon strings on it.
Okay.
And I put it in a pillow sack. Remember that song by Chuck Berry? He carried his guitar in a gunny sack.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Way on down by the railroad tracks.
Yeah, Johnny Be Good. Mm-hmm.
So I was down in St. Augustine, Florida. I took my guitar on the bus down to St. Augustine, Florida. And I was camping out beside the railroad track, mm-hmm. and I had my guitar in a pillow sack,
okay.
just like the song. Right?
Wow!
And I had some a booklet of music with Jerry Yates. It was called "Hootenanny Hop Hullabaloo," and I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a chord progression in there called "Progression in G," and I used to play that out in the woods, right?
Mm.
And one time I was sitting there playing, this is in Florida, St. Augustine, Florida, and these huge black snakes whizzed right by me while I was playing it. I was playing it really, really fast and loud and shit.
Mm-hmm.
These snakes came by, so I was thinking, yeah, I was playing to these snakes, right?
Wow. That's amazing.
But no, I flipped out on an episode about the spirits and broke the guitar.
Oh, no.
I got it from my aunt. I bought it from my aunt, mm-hmm. and my Uncle Paul used to play it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And my cousin even asked me whatever happened to that guitar, and I told him mm-hmm. that I flipped out and broke it when I was in St. Augustine, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But right across from the railroad tracks across the road was a Howard Johnson's. My mom used to work at a Howard Johnson's back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, somehow the cops knew that I was sleeping out there, and they got my property. I had like a big duffel bag and shit sitting out there.
Okay.
And they went and got it. I was supposed to get that shit back. I don't know whatever happened.
Mm.
They called my mom or something.
Mm. Oh, that's a shame.
Up in Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you try to? You just go where you wanted to, or like when it got cold outside, like the winter months, where you know, what did you do when it got real cold? If you were like at a state where it was like you know snowing and you know 20 degrees outside, how did you kind of survive that without a you know having a roof over your head?
Man, I don't even remember. I used to get in with people. I there was times in Michigan when I'd be out in the cold.
Mm-hmm.
Like I used to go to it was a motel or a hotel, a motel on the side of the freeway and go in the back door. It'd be heated in there, sleep in the hallway and shit.
Mm-hmm.
I've done shit like that. I used to sleep in boiler rooms when I was in Los Angeles.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
When I was in Los Angeles, I slept in a boiler room. This was before I got arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody was drying their clothes in the washroom. Okay. I was in the boiler room
mm-hmm.
and I went in there and there was like, all these top of the line, Roglands and Calvin Klein's right. and shirts and shit,
mm-hmm.
fancy corduroys and shit.
Yeah.
And I needed a change of clothes, so I just grabbed the Roglands and I put them on. And I kept my sweater, which was I needed a change. It wasn't that bad, but
mm-hmm.
it was cold out, so I had that sweater.
Yeah.
And just walked out.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. Oh no.
I know that guy was flipped off like a motherfucker. Those are some expensive jeans.
Sure.
We looked those up on. I remember all that shit.
That's wild.
My memories are fading from times on the road and shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look back, the stuff you remember, was anything that got scary on the road? Or was it mostly positive? Or any time where it got really a little scary?
No, it never got scary. But well, there was one time in Daytona Beach. I had like a screwdriver or some shit. I can't remember what it was. I was breaking into a motel room
mm-hmm.
for somewhere to sleep, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to take a shower and shit. And I broke into this room, and everything would have been fine if I just would have went in. Nobody would have knew the difference. Because I done that in Florida another time. I was in an alley, and I got into the window of the bathroom. Mm-hmm. I put like a board, and I got up on this board, put it on the side of the wall, went in there. They rented the room while I was in there. So somebody came and opened the door and went into the room. No. I was in there. I said, "Oh yeah, well, I'm just leaving." They said, "What the, you know, what's going on?" Right?
Oh no.
I was in Daytona Beach. I broke into the hotel room, the motel room, and I should have just went in.
Yeah.
But I thought, no, this room is not clean, right? Because I was like a clean freak, right? So I went to break into a different one. And a black security guard came up. He was at the bottom of the stairs. I was on the second level. Mm-hmm. And I started to walk down the stairs, and he started talking about, yeah, well, this and that and this, yeah. Right? So I pulled out my Buck Light that I bought at – I was going to buy a guitar, mm-hmm. but I didn't have – I think it was like 30 bucks or some shit or mm-hmm. or over 20. No, I think it was like 30. And I went across the street to a biker shop and bought a used Buck Light. You mm-hmm. ever heard of a Buck Light?
Sure. Uh-huh.
It's a lock blade.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I bought a used Buck Light. So I was carrying around this Buck Light, and the dude started talking about, yeah, well, you know, I'm going with him and all this shit. So I pulled out the Buck mm-hmm. and I clicked the motherfucker open really mm-hmm. loud. Mm-hmm. And I started walking down the stairs, and he ran off.
Sure, yeah, I guess he would.
Oh, no.
Now, were you ever in danger, like as far as somebody trying to take advantage of you or try to rob you at all, or not really?
Well, I stabbed myself in the hand one time on Seward and Fountain Street in Los Angeles.
Ugh.
I had some Winston Light cigarettes. That's the kind my mom used to smoke.
I remember them, yeah.
I probably was shoplifting them, and that's how I used to get my cigarettes a lot of times from the Safeway down there.
Mm-hmm.
And, I can't remember the street it's on. They changed that to like a Federated or some fucking shit. But,
mm-hmm.
I think the dude bummed a cigarette off me, and I asked him if he had any, weed or some shit. He said something about he had some speed or something.
Mm-hmm.
So we walked into a little drive that was in between these, like apartments or some shit mm-hmm. where they park their cars or some shit. And he had like a little wallet with a chain, with like a chain on it
mm-hmm.
that holds it.
Yeah.
Holds the wallet. You ever sure. seen those?
Oh yeah. 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 I saw the same. They're still out there.
And he pulled out a little small ass knife
mm.
and he grabbed it by the shirt and started waving the knife in my face.
Wow.
So he put my shirt up over my head, and I was down on my hands and knees on the ground, and I got up. And I went to lunge at him like this, and I poked my hand right in the palm, right on the edge of the knife.
Wow. Oh.
He just like backed off and got scared, and I grabbed like a beer bottle that was on the street,
mm-hmm.
and I just walked away.
That's got lucky. Definitely lucky there.
There was a hospital not far from there. I went down there. You had to pay, though, to get anything done. I think they put, like, some gauze on it and told me where the LCMC was,
yeah.
Los Angeles County Medical Center, which was a free hospital.
Yeah.
So I had to go all the way over there.
Oh,
they put, like, 3 or 4 stitches in there. I still got the scar.
Ah, it's horrible. Yeah, I'm still jealous. All those stories on the road. I mean, something I always wanted to do. Just pack up and go, or get an RV and just go across, just see the world. I mean, see the country itself, which is just great. Now, have you ever had a car, or is that something?
Never had a car, never had a driver's license,
all right.
Never voted.
That's wild. Now, how old were you when you got there, when you got arrested? How old were you?
I was 24 going on 25.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So still pretty young then. Oh, that's wild. Now, I had mentioned, that you're coming on to the podcast. Everybody got real excited. It's funny. Everybody mentions the same thing when they mention your name. That those who know you is that famous picture we talked about it before. You in the courtroom. You're
with the thumbs up.
With the thumbs up. Yeah. We talked about it, but you tell everybody where that came from. What you're thinking in your mind, or what just happened for you to give the thumbs up? Because that's like the famous picture.
That was because I got the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was all messed up on that shit, like I was telling you about, somebody would be raised up and then the spirits would talk to me again.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first thing when I first got arrested, January 20th, 1987, when I was at the Wilcox substation, whatever it's called in Hollywood.
Okay.
And they handed me a pink slip that said murder, and they said, yeah, you're gonna have the death penalty. And that's immediately when I started to take off after it, because of the shit that I used to think about.
Sure.
When I would see helicopters and planes and shit flying by, I thought that, you know, my life was in, that if my life was in peril, all of that stuff would happen. And well, I tried to plead guilty January
20th,
1987. I mean, January 23rd, 1987.
Gotcha.
I had my agreement. My lawyer wouldn't let me plead guilty. So that started a big problem between me and him.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I attacked him two times.
Oh, really? That's
wild. Get him off the case, trying to put my shit through to where I would get the death penalty.
Yeah.
But then as time went on, I found out that it was all solitary confinement and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I like solitary confinement.
Mm-hmm.
So that added another reason why I wanted to get the death penalty.
Yeah. Now, how was the adjustment where, especially in California, where, okay, in your mind, you're thinking of the death penalty. It might not be a year or two before, you know, they put somebody to death, but it's been forever. I mean, California's not putting anybody to death anymore. I mean, was that adjustment?
Does that ever, when you wrote that book, Serial Killers in Heaven, Victims in Hell, was that what you were getting at?
No, that was examining people's faith. Because there's a lot of people in prison outreach that I've been involved in, and they got parole coming up. So, oh, I'm a Christian. I'm a religious person to make a show. Like, it's all fake. So a lot of the people that I talked to, I was like, oh, let's see if it's real. So I picked a few people like David Berkowitz, the son of Sam, a couple Charles Manson family members who said they were Christians. So like, okay, let's, you know, that's kind of my background. I know theology. And so by talking to them, I realized a lot of people that I talked to were real. I mean, they really believed in their faith, and other people, not so much. You know, so is it just like a show for parole? But they're making.
I thought you were saying like the serial killers are getting treated well in prison. They're living. It takes forever to execute, and the victims are in hell.
No, it was more of a powerful statement to where it's possible through faith that God can forgive through the power of faith. Someone who has done, you know, multiple crimes, multiple offenses, like serial killers or violent offenders, while a victim might not receive salvation because they don't believe anything. So kind of that twist of like, wow, a serial killer will really go to heaven and a victim will go to a place called hell or not receive salvation if their faith is genuine. So it's really one to kind of poke the bear a little bit to get people thinking about the reality of forgiveness and the power of forgiveness. Where somebody, we look at people, oh, he's a good person or she's a good person. Well, if they have no faith, well, maybe not going anywhere, you know, when they die, you know, or, you know, going to a place called hell or heaven. So just with the Christian faith, I examined, you know, what the Bible actually said and examined people's faith. And I let the reader decide what's true, what's not true. But that's the gist of the book.
So how did anybody even know about me? You say that people were excited or said, how does anybody even know about me?
Well, what's called true crime. You know, serial killer this, serial killer that, or violent offender, or Manson family members, anything related to that, or people in prison who have some notoriety or a nickname, oh, the Korean slasher, or whatever nickname somebody might have, everybody knows
everything. I thought that was dumb. That was the dumbest name.
Everybody loves it. They think that's a great name.
They called me a Michigan drifter. I thought that was all right.
Oh, there you go. That's a good one.
Yeah.
But now with TV, you can't turn on a TV station now with something true crime related, a detective story, a serial killer this. So everybody knows everything about everybody, especially in the California area. It's just knowledge. I mean, because whether it's a documentary or places like YouTube where you see one of my videos at, if you just, you know, you put on YouTube your name or somebody else's name, so many podcasts are out there now. Mine's a little different because I talk to people directly. But a lot of podcasts are just two people talking about a case, you know, just in general, just say, hey, let's talk about this case there. So if you put your name on YouTube, you're going to see multiple things come up. So the information is just out there. So everybody's anybody who's anybody is just looking people up and what they've done or what they're supposedly done. And it's just so popular right now.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely what I supposedly done, because mm-hmm. it's like everybody says, they cleaned up the books with me. Mm-hmm. They arrested me in one spot. They didn't take a look at anything. Mm-hmm. They didn't take a look at anything to where self-defense or, mm-hmm. or with the kind of people that were involved, yeah. they just automatically put me with the worst charge. And then they pinned five other charges on me mm-hmm. with no witnesses or no proof or anything.
Wow. Just go by there because you were in the local area of that or something like that, or you happen to be around there at the same time. That's kind of what they said.
They're saying that this stuff happened mm-hmm. in this Koreatown. I had no idea that I was in Koreatown.
Oh yeah, sure. Why would you? Mm-hmm.
And you know, because I'm from Michigan and everything, but
sure. Mm-hmm.
I guess that's what they were saying, that it was all in Koreatown or some shit.
Yeah.
But
when was the first time you heard that nickname? When did that come?
Like, I can't even remember. I can't even remember. I remember reading the paper. I think I was in the Herald Examiner, which was right around January 23rd or something around there. Mm-hmm. There was an article in there about a guy named R. Bud Dwyer or Dreyer.
Okay.
R. Bud Dwyer or Dreyer. Mm-hmm. W-Y-E-R-D-R-Y-E-R.
Okay.
He had committed suicide. He had, I think he was, they arrested him. They were going to arrest him for embezzling or some shit. Mm-hmm. But I still remember that was in the paper.
Okay.
And that's when I was in there.
Oh, gotcha.
But. Mm-hmm. I don't remember when I first heard that Koreatown. I thought that shit was dumb, man. Right.
When you first got to prison, because you had a quote unquote nickname or some pop through the press, was that a problem coming in there? Because, you know, like where other inmates, people are laughed at, they, you know, oh, here comes the Koreatown slasher guy, or we just like another person coming in. That wasn't a big deal for you at all.
No, it wasn't.
That's good. How was adjusting to that? Once you first got to, I know probably from jail and then sentencing and then to prison, was it hard to adjust to that life of the last, you know, been there, you know, for a long time now, but how was transitioning to that or kind of getting, do you ever get used to being there? Is that something you never really get used to it?
Oh, no, I got used to it right off the bat in the jail.
Oh, really?
Okay. I knew that they had done a number on me mm-hmm. and, that they were never going to, that I was never going to get out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I knew that. So I never really ever thought about getting out.
Okay. So you kind of already settled. You already had like a peace in your mind about it, kind of peace in your heart to like, okay, it is what it is now.
Over the years when I was younger, I used to scream and holler and do all kinds of shit like that. And
yeah.
And, but as I got older, I came out of that.
Mm-hmm. That's,
you know,
good.
A lot of that was the spirits and shit too, screaming and hollering, breaking my TV.
Oh no!
One my mom sent me. And
did you ever get in trouble there, or you've been pretty much good, you know, the whole time?
Pretty much.
That's good. Mm-hmm. It was where you're at. In that, have they moved you around a little bit, or you kind of been in the same area where you got to know the same people, you know, the same people around you, or you've been mostly by yourself?
Oh, you're by yourself.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, for the transition, now that they're moving, they're getting rid of San Quentin's death row, I think starting in February, they're going to start transitioning people out to different places. Do you have any idea what's going to happen to you, or where you're going to go? Or
February? Is that what they say?
Yeah, there's going to be a couple different waves. Starting in February, they're going to start transferring people out. Did they tell you?
Oh, how do you know that?
I know a few people on San Quentin on death row. Like Eric Houston is one guy.
That's what they're saying. That doesn't mean it's going to happen soon.
That's true too. You know, that could say, who knows exactly? But what he was saying, the last word he had is February is when they're going to start. Like, they already sent him boxes to start packing up all his stuff to be transferred out. But the initial word is they're going to start in February. But it's going to go. It's going to take like a year or so. It's going to take a long time. That's just like phase one, you know, of people coming out. Did they give you any inclination of where you're going to go, or you're just kind of going to just go with the flow? It's like,
just go with the flow.
Yeah.
Because I'm from Michigan. Mm-hmm. I'm from Michigan, so I don't know anything about it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, whatever you're going to go, it'll be like less security. You know, you'll be a little bit, sounds like you'll have like a little bit more freedom, a little bit more time outside and around and all that. And is that something you're kind of like, not worried about, but kind of a little uneasy, like the fear of the unknown, or you're just, all right, I'll, whatever happens, happens.
No, you have all of your, people have all of their little things that they go through, paranoia and all this, but yeah. You just really go where you go, you know?
Yeah. Did they mention anything about taking your guitar? Able to take your guitar with you?
Yeah, you can.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess between all the football games tonight, no one cares about going on a video chat. So you get
no,
the extra time.
It was because of that that little search.
Oh, okay. Did you find out what the search was for, or what happened?
No, I never did.
Yeah.
They wouldn't tell me.
Now, what
I asked one of them. He said no. I can't tell you.
What did this lock everybody down? Is that the case when someone search? Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
From all morning until like four o'clock.
Wow. How often does that happen when they lock you down for whatever reason?
Well, I think the last was only a few months ago. Mm-hmm. Three, 4 months ago, something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Now, how much time do you get outside? Do you go outside a lot, or you get any kind of yard time? Or do you?
No, I've been staying in. I've just been staying in.
Okay. Now, how much communication do you have with, you know, the other guys around you? Do you have like friends there, or anybody that you trust? Or you just kind of usually stay to yourself.
Well, the tiers are all the open. The cells are bars, and you just talk down the tier.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's cool. Now, do you have like time? Like can you interact with people? Like hang out? Like face to face with people?
No.
Gotcha. Yeah, I wasn't sure. Now you said you have a single cell, right? There's no double. You don't have a cell or anything, right? Yeah. Does anybody there have that, or is it's all single cells?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. I guess. Yeah. I can hear in the background. I guess somebody scored.
Yeah.
So I guess with there, I mean, people had always asked, you know, when I found out, you know, we're going to come on and do a little podcast, they always want to hear about, you know, prison stories. But really, it's more solitary where you're at, you don't, probably nothing really too negative happened there, because everybody has their own cell, basically, right?
Yeah.
Like as far as people hear about like stabbings or fights. But where you're the part of the facility you're at in, nothing like that, I guess, happens because everybody kind of is just by themselves.
It happens.
Oh, really? It does. Mm-hmm. Is there a time where everybody's together? Like, do you guys eat together? Or like, how would like something like that happen? Like a stabbing or whatever. Like, how does that happen if everybody's by themselves?
Outside on the yards.
Oh, so there is yard time then where you can hang out.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. There is that. Gotcha. That makes sense. I thought everybody was by themselves, but your time, you can interact with everybody.
Yeah.
That's good. What was the wildest thing that you've seen there?
Oh, I've never seen anything.
Hmm.
Back when I was out there, that was like 30 years ago.
Oh, gotcha. All right.
That was in the AC.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, so you have a TV in your room?
Yeah.
Now, what do you like to watch? What are some of your favorite shows to watch?
Oh, well, I've been watching Pawn Stars all day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. that's a great one. Definitely good. Every once in a while, you see like a musician come on there. Like they have a guitar or an amplifier. You see somebody?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're on tonight. Austin City Limits?
Oh, yeah.
Usually on the weekend they have that, but I don't know. There wasn't one last night.
Gotcha.
Usually on Saturday and Sunday. But Sunday I watch The Fugitive at 2 in the morning.
2 in the morning, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
1960s.
Oh, the original one, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
And then Mission Impossible.
Sure.
The 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
1960s.
Go ahead. Now, do you got with the app that you have, the GTL app, do you have like music stations you can listen to from the app?
Oh, they got it. They just put a radio on here.
Oh, good, good.
And but it doesn't. You can only get like one station or something.
Oh no! Is it any good? Or have you?
Yeah, you can't get the rock station.
Oh no!
The Bone, 107.7 The Bone. Can't get it.
Oh, that stinks. Is there any like a paid service? Like you can pay for better music for the app?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It costs, I think, $5.49 for a month.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, it would be good to have. Definitely. Do you have any? Do you have like a music player at all there?
No, I used to have a radio, but the shit just brought me down so bad that I stopped listening to it because I used to think that there was something in it.
Mm-hmm.
Something in it for me, listening okay. to the rocker, and I think it was called the rocker when I first got here.
Okay,
and then it became the Bone, the rock station.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would listen to the Saturday Night Groove thing, which was disco all Friday and Saturday and Sunday or some shit.
Okay,
and that was Brett Larson, the disc jockey, Brett Larson.
Okay,
and but I used to think there was something in it, you know. Like something where the spirits would talk again and
mm-hmm.
where there would be something, you know,
mm-hmm.
and even other shit that I thought about too.
Mm-hmm.
But then my mom died and shit and mm-hmm. it was just depressing to listen to music and
okay. Mm-hmm.
There was nothing in for me and
mm-hmm.
stopped listening to it. I don't even have a radio now.
Okay. What do people wanted to know too? Like, what's like your daily routine there? Like, is like sound like repetitive every day, or something different every day, or what do you kind of just do to keep occupied and keep yourself happy? And
just play the guitar, watch TV, mm-hmm. eat, mm-hmm. and usually just that.
Good.
Talk to the psychologist and shit like that.
Mm-hmm. How does that go with the psychologist? Something to. Have good conversations back and forth, like good communication.
Yeah.
That's good. Definitely good to have. Mm-hmm.
I tell her about the problems with the spirits.
Mm-hmm. What does she say?
Oh, well, she tells me that I shouldn't be so hard on myself because I'm always kicking myself.
Mm.
That I didn't listen. And she said you were only 12 years old. So
yeah.
My brother told me that one time too, and I said, "Well, there's no excuse, because just like we're talking right now,
mm-hmm.
is how I heard him
yeah.
telling me to call the ambulance. My grandmother was going to die,
mm-hmm.
and just like having a conversation right now, that I heard him as plain as day, and I just didn't listen.
Yeah,
I went back to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what happened? What happened to the grandmother? Something actually happened to her? Did she actually pass away?
Yeah, well, you know what? I don't know if it was that same night,
mm-hmm.
or whatever night or early morning, whatever time it was,
mm-hmm.
night.
Mm-hmm.
My mom said that she choked on her lunch.
Oh, wow. Mm.
She was in some type of a home or some shit.
Mm.
And so I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's wild. Definitely.
I always
wild.
Tried to find out.
Now, when you mentioned spirits, is that something like, as far as like a religious thing? Like you have like, you know, from a Christian foundation, like someone's trying to tell you something, or like more of like a godly thing, a godly spirit trying to give you wisdom in one form or another?
No, just the spirits of the dead, even the dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
The spirits of the dinosaurs.
That's what gotcha.
Could be a spirit of a dinosaur.
Gotcha. Oh, so you're not really sure exactly. It just some of the spirits of the dead in general.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, there you have it. The Koreatown Slayer himself, Joseph Dangs. Now, I've known Joseph, you know, for a long time. The Wi-Fi cut out at the end there. He called me back just to kind of wrap things up. But we always have fun talking. It's always a blast. The first time I got to hear him play guitar, he's talking about the guitar. It was out of tune for so long and finally got it tuned up over the phone. Say, so we got the jam. How often you can say you jammed with somebody on death row at San Quentin? You know, that's a first. That's a bucket list for a thing for basically anybody. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. We got much more to come. Martin Kipp, also at San Quentin. He actually was housed with Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker, for a while when he was in jail, I think before prison. He's been on my audio podcast before. He's going to be joining us soon. I think next week I'm going to be filming an episode with Martin Kipp. Talking about his artwork. He's been doing artwork for maybe a month. You wait till you see these pictures. I got a bunch of artwork here. For being only 1 month of an artist, he's has some tremendous artwork. He's working a bunch of new stuff now too. We're going to talk about the art. I'll hold up, you know, different pieces that he has, and we'll talk about it. Hey, thanks for joining us. I appreciate all the subscribers. I think we cracked 800. Let's keep it going. Next milestone's 1,000. So share, like, subscribe, all that fun stuff. And until next time, see ya.